There are so many other factors coming in there to maybe suggest or get us thinking whether, you know, that there may be, our child may or may not be autistic. And there are just a huge number of sort of traits to look at. But what we do have to be mindful of and really careful of is that actually autistic traits are, in my opinion, are quite often just humanistic traits. There are many different traits. So I would say if you are or do suspect that your child is autistic, then I would definitely, to be fair, go and get a referral from your GP, because it is really important that we do understand their needs.
Welcome to the Sleep Nanny podcast. We're here to serve as your parenting partner, your sanity saver, and bring you a healthy dose of wholesome conversation with guests and experts to make the minefield of parenting more joyful and less overwhelming. Welcome to another episode of the Sleep Nanny podcast. So I am here today with Vicky Cooksley. Vicky is one of our amazing franchisees at the Sleep Nanny, and she's an absolute specialist when it comes to autism. Vicky has absolutely nailed how to help families when it comes to dealing with the challenges with little one's sleep, but also with the added complexity of autism. So I'm going to introduce you, Vicky, and share a little bit about, you know, really what got you into that specialism in the first place. How did you get here?
Thank you very much. Hi, everyone. I first sort of became interested in autism and sleep, autism in general, actually. My two young children, who are 9 and 6, are neurodiverse. They've been diagnosed with autism and ADHD, and from that, I guess what you'd say, they've inspired me actually to sort of delve into that world, look at the science behind sort of autism and ADHD and all the neurodiversity, and from there, really looking at all the challenges that we've sort of come across and all those hurdles that many families are already aware of, I'm sure it's sort of grown from there. My passion with being able to help and find solutions, not just for my children, but for other people's children as well. And it started off very much with giving advice and helping out and making suggestions. And from there, it sort of zoned in and really sort of specified and really sort of became sort of more of an expert in the sleep aspect of things.
Amazing, amazing. And you really are. It's important to have this kind of help, because I think people often fear or worry that the help with sleep and that kind of support isn't going to work for them because they have got these added complexities, and they think, well, yeah, that's all well and good for, you know, neurotypical children, but it's not going to work for me. I can't be helped. And I love that you're here to say, yes, you can. Yes, there is hope. You just need to take things a little differently. Yeah. It's a just different approach, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I can't emphasize that enough, to be honest. It is. So many families I work with, are lots of them turn around to me and say, I've tried absolutely everything, and they're absolutely right, they have tried everything that they've read about and heard about. But what we've got to be mindful of is what they've read about and heard about are very much neurotypical based sleep solutions, and they don't sort of consider any of the autistic traits and sensory differences and things like that. So of course it's not going to work for a lot of our children, definitely.
And when you think about it, there's basically different chemistry going on in the brain, isn't there? And so the hormone releases are different. The things that one brain experiences are different to how another brain experiences. So we need to take those different approaches. And we take a bespoke approach to helping families with sleep in every case anyway, but it's just a whole nother layer to consider. And I mean, we'll talk a little bit about how parents can approach this with autism at play. But I imagine there are a lot of people who are in that sort of cross zone of, is it autism causing a sleep problem, or is it a sleep problem presenting symptoms that look like potentially autism or ADHD, which I think we'll come to that as well, because I know there are lots of people out there probably sat there now without a diagnosis that are curious and that are wondering, you know, does this apply to me or not? Is my child going to need this different approach or not? And I think that the great thing is, you know, stick around, listen to Vicky, because she's going to share things with you that will actually help anyway. So if you're in doubt, then listen up and it's going to help you. So starting off with those where, you know, they got a little one, they have got that diagnosis or almost or pretty darn certain. And they're that parent that you said, they've tried everything, they've listened to everything, and they're still stuck. Why might they still be stuck?
There are a lot of different reasons. And what we've got to be sort of mindful of is lots of children don't get diagnosed until sort of five or older. So we are quite frequently working with families that are older children and into their teens as well. But like you mentioned, the sleep sort of methods that I use actually can apply to any child. So it doesn't matter whatsoever if they actually have that diagnosis or not. The methods can work beautifully. And it's really making sure that we're meeting your child's needs. And that's really fundamental. And it's also looking at the things that we need to consider with, yes, possibly, you know, autistic traits, of course, but their sensory differences. There's lots of sensory things going on for every single person, every single child, but it's being sort of that sort of really conscious of it and really getting to know your child's sensory differences, as well as their processing needs. Every child processes things differently, and quite frequently autistic children do need a visual aid alongside verbal communication. Quite often, if we're working with non-verbal children as well, we need to really consider how to get that message across to them in a really sort of calm environment. The other thing we need to look at is bedtime influencing or really contributing to meltdowns or shutdowns, and they are quite significant for a lot of autistic children, especially when there's a lot of pressure going on. And another thing just to mention quickly is anxiety. It's quite often linked. A lot of autistic children have got higher anxiety levels, so therefore we really need to delve into that world as well. It's not just that night or that seven till seven sleep. We need to look at that 24-hour picture, definitely. And there's so many things that influence that we have to look at. So things that go on during the day, schooling, transitional processing. There's just a whole world of things we need to delve into, which is a lot more than just sleep. And we look at that whole 24-hour picture to get those really great results.
It is, isn't it? It's their whole day. It's their whole routine experience of life from in 24 hours.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there anything you see repeatedly as a stumbling block where it is a case of a child who has that autism or likely has autism in there, but something that you see
telltale
comes up all the time.
Quite often what we do see, always sleep is a thing that gets affected mostly. That's one of the major aspects of the struggles that a lot of autistic children face. What we quite often see is things like children, you might have been out with them all day, we know they should be absolutely exhausted, but in fact when they go to bed they are fidgeting, they're restless, they are scratching the wall, they're tossing and turning, they're in and out their duvet, they're trying to get out of bed. It's like their brains can't switch off, it's like their bodies can't switch off. And that's not necessarily an autistic trait. It's not to say your child is autistic, but we do see things like that quite frequently. We also see a lot of waking nights, early risings, high anxiety, and meltdowns and shutdowns quite often around bedtime. And that's usually actually linked, not necessarily because they are autistic, but actually because of what's happened during the day, that build up, that those inconsistencies that go on throughout daily living, whether they're at nursery or at school or if they're homeschooled. There's so many different inconsistencies, and that can really, really challenge a lot of autistic children with those changes. Even small changes can make huge aftermath, a ripple of all sorts going on that goes on into the evening. And we quite often see masking during the day, especially if children are at school. And there is a big difference some of the time between autistic girls and autistic boys. It's not always the case. It's not black and white, of course, but we do predominantly see quite a lot of masking with autistic girls. And therefore, we kind of get that Coke bottle effect with a lot of young people where they get home, it's a safe place, and they explode. That's when you get, though, that they're over, over a sort of sensitive. They need to decompress basically after school. And if we don't allow that to happen, then the bedtime is definitely affected in a negative way. So we do have to look quite a lot into all the factors that will trigger a negative outcome for bedtime effectively. But yeah, that could be seen in multiple different ways.
Is that potentially heightened then when there's autism at play? Because to some extent, I'd say you can see that with neurotypical children anyway. I get that myself. Like, you have that kind of Irish say, it's like they're being brave all day. Yeah. They're sucking it up because they're, putting on a front. And then especially in the first few years of school.
Yes.
Yeah. And then they come home, like you say, a safe place, and that's where they can let their emotions out. And I think we all do that. So would, there's an element of that for everyone. So if somebody was listening to this and thought, oh my God, well, my child does that, I would say, well, yeah, most do, but you're saying it would be more frequent, harder to calm.
Absolutely. And it wouldn't just be the meltdowns or the shutdowns that we're looking at. There are so many other factors coming in there to maybe suggest or get us thinking whether, that there may be, our child may or may not be autistic. And there are just a huge number of sort of traits to look at. But what we do have to be mindful of and really careful of is that actually autistic traits are, in my opinion, are quite often just humanistic traits. There are many different traits. So I would say if you are or do suspect that your child is autistic, then I would definitely, to be fair, go and get a referral from your GP onto a get a paediatrician involved in that sense, because it is really important that we do understand their needs. The one thing that we do know is that it is, over 80% of autistic children do struggle with sleep. So the percentage of children that are autistic, the vast majority will struggle with sleep. And their common reasons are melatonin levels, the natural melatonin levels aren't being produced as much as we'd like them to be produced naturally in the system. And we've got to remember that melatonin isn't anything, to be scared of or not to talk about. It's an actual hormone we all produce. But for a lot of autistic children, their natural melatonin levels aren't reaching that level that we would like them to reach at. So they struggle to fall asleep at night. And that's where we see that frustration with them. And they might be going, I want to go to sleep, but they physically can't. And I guess a lot of misconceptions I hear are parents and carers saying, well, my child doesn't need that much sleep. They absolutely do. I promise you, they need just as much sleep as their peers do. The difference is they are struggling. Their bodies is struggling basically to switch off. And that can sometimes be down to the natural melatonin levels. The other thing that is quite often affected if with an autistic child and adult is the circadian rhythm, their natural body clock. And again, if we think about being jet lagged or if we worked nights and then had to sleep during the day and then suddenly our jobs change to a 9-to-5 job, our bodies take a little time to readjust. And that feeling, especially if you're, imagine you're jet lagged, that feeling of going, oh, I want to sleep during the day, but I have to hold on and stay awake till it's bedtime. That feeling you've got quite often is a frequent feeling for an autistic child if their circadian rhythm isn't quite where we'd like it to be. The great news is there are solutions. There are multiple solutions. What's really important though is we get that solution that really meets your child's needs. And that's where that magic lies. That's where you're going to see those wonderful sort of improvements, and you're going to see your child struggling less and less and less for sleep. And they're going to go down to sleep easier. They're going to start sleeping through the night a lot easier. But it is all about meeting your child's needs and getting it really right and spot on for them. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And we'll come in a second to some of those solutions. But just one more kind of thought here on, I'm going to tax you on this one. So if you are in a position where you're like, okay, some of this is ringing true. I don't know if I have a child with autism, ADHD, or just a super alert, because we talk about that a lot with neurotypicals. We're like, super alert, I've got a super alert. And to be honest, I've never even considered that there could be any other diagnosis needed there. And maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But I've always gone, yeah, we've got a super alert here. There could be a lot of super alerts out there who actually aren't neurodiverse. Yeah. But, you know, how do we, and to reassure parents, you don't need to know necessarily. No. You can still put these things in place. But how is there a way to differentiate and say, well, that could be ADHD, or that's more likely an ADHD trait than an autism trait? I'm thinking of a little boy I know who a lot of people would say probably has ADHD, but they're really similar. Are there any clear differentiators that you can
share? Do you know what? It is really hard as a parent, and you know, even a parent carer myself, when my 9-year-old was younger, there were so many conflicting people going, oh, of course he's not he's not autistic. You know, he doesn't look autistic. And these are some of the classics you get. I would strongly suggest that you're, as a parent or carer, your gut instinct says it all, and it goes a long, long way. I always encourage people to really think about what's going on, really use their gut instinct. And actually, majority of people on you know, in this world aren't qualified to diagnose. Of course they're not. So if you suspect, or even an inkling, you think something's just not quite adding up, something doesn't feel quite right, or you're just not sure, the best thing you can actually do is go to a GP, talk through it, all the traits that you're seeing, everything that you think might be neurodiverse, talk it through with the GP, and then they will make a referral to the pediatrician. That's when you're going to get that diagnosis, or flip it on its head and go, actually, no, he's not, you know, neurotypical child, we think, just lively or whatever's going on. But it's really down to the professionals to they know what they're looking for. But really, I think my best advice is go with your gut instinct, because 9 times out of 10, it's right. From what I've experienced with other parents and carers, and always go with, you know, what you think. Don't be pushed into what other people say or think, because actually you're the expert in your child. Nobody else is. So that's kind of the way I recommend for people if they are struggling or they're worried. Always just, you know, first rule of thumb is go to the GP. But what I would say is jot down any traits that you might think are possibly neurodiverse, or any sort of repetition, habits, personality traits, things like that, that you think this is actually different from all of their peers, and take that list with you. And that's really what I would recommend, because they do know what they're looking for, and then they can definitely help you out and put your mind at ease. More often than not, parents just want to know one way or the other, so then they know how to help.
How to support them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think also looking at the parents, and, or, you know, yourself if you're one of those parents, like looking at the, you know, any signs of those traits in the parents, because more and more research is suggesting hereditary. You know, there are lines of hereditary. What's the word I'm looking for? Where, it is hereditary. So looking at ourselves too, the number of times I've seen a parent talk about their child as potentially neurodiverse, and then I'm thinking, yeah, they probably get that from you. You can sort of see it, can't you?
It's a real eye opener, although they can't definitely say it is, you know, it is passed down. It's all of those. The scientific evidence and research isn't quite there yet. But if you do look at statistics and through that kind of research, and you speak to families, and I speak to a lot of families, and they start recognizing these traits within themselves, and it is a real eye-opener. It really, really is. It makes you as a parent understand yourself more as well. It could be a really positive thing for a lot of parents and carers. So I always say, you know, it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. It isn't. It really isn't. There are some wonderful elements to it. And actually, as a parent myself, it's allowed me to explore so many different avenues and become an expert in sort of autism because of the inspiration of my child. And it's just, it's amazing. It's an amazing journey to go on. It's tough. It's a bit like a roller coaster from day to day, but there are some wonderful aspects. And actually, the one thing that you do kind of want to nail is the sleep aspect of things, because once you've got sleep,
for sure,
it does make things easier. You can just deal with those daily, ups and downs so much stronger.
Yeah.
I see so many families struggle. It's purely based on lack of sleep, and it's hard to watch, especially when there are solutions out there. And there are so many families that, like we mentioned earlier, who feel really defeated, and it is because that information just isn't out there yet. It's just not. Yeah. It's too generic, the information that's sort of given across, and even these generic autism courses are quite generic. So it's really sort of a journey that you go on as a family and explore. And there's always an element of trial and error with anything, but you do, on that journey, you do really get to know your child and their needs and their traits, whether they are autistic traits or just human traits. It's almost irrelevant. It's all about getting to really know how your child works and how they process things and how they, if they need to decompress and things like that, and putting solutions in place in order to help.
I think, and I think it's really also reassuring, you touched on it there, how it's not doom and gloom, it's not bad. No one's broken. No. Like, our brains are all wired differently. And whilst people will say neurotypical, neurodiverse, actually, I think it's all just different. Yeah. And if you understand that, well, when we have this sort of wiring of the brain and the chemistry works like this, these things are most like, these are going to be more prevalent responses. And if we can understand that and tune into that, then we can work with them and support that. And same for adults. And I don't know if all our listeners would know this or not, but I was diagnosed with ADHD after I just turned 41. So I was 40 when I figured out that was obvious and I hadn't known until then. And now I can understand why certain things feel challenging, but what to do to make them easier. But at the same time, I've become very aware of the super strengths, and there are so many superpowers to having these different wirings of the brain. That's why we need different people, different personalities. And sometimes there will be a personality trait that's very similar to a trait where the brain and the chemistry is different. As someone with ADHD, I know that I process dopamine faster than somebody who doesn't have ADHD. Like, it's just going, oh, okay, that's why this happens, or that's why, and people's coping strategies are different, with ADHD and chaos. Like, some people are very messy. For me, I need order so that I'm not distracted by chaos. You start making sense of the world. And
absolutely,
luckily, sleep's never been an issue for me. But that's why, like you, I'm so passionate about making sure that one thing that's at the bottom of the pyramid of everything in life, that sleep, right there with air, food and water, is good, because everything else will stack on top of that. And all those challenges that you've mentioned with children as well, regulating emotions, social aspects, all these things will be easier if they've got that sleep foundation in place. So let's talk about that a little bit. Like, what are some of the key things that we can think about when we're supporting a autistic, ADHD or super alert child? Because it's not going to hurt if you are sat there going, oh my gosh, I don't know, but I'm definitely, something's resonating. Yeah. And I know that my child's not just like everyone, and I need something different. Yeah. What could we start with?
There's a few things to sort of get your head around, really, and start thinking about. And one of the main things for a lot of children is sort of that anxiety, and that not necessarily anxiety as such. I know when we say anxiety, people start panicking, but it's not anxiety as in, you know, might not be social anxiety, it might not even be separation anxiety, but it's all those things that go on, all that build up during the school day or during nursery. And if our children do or are struggling with sensory differences, for example, nursery or school have been particularly busy, loud, lots have been going on, lots of directions, lots of sort of demands on our children, then we really need to be considerate of when they come home at the end of the day. Demand avoidance is again something that any child we can work on as parent carers, but any child we really can. So what I always suggest to families is when our children come home from nursery or school, allow them to have 20 minutes, half an hour of decompression time. And that can be in the form of anything that they can really enjoy doing. That can be a snack. It can be reading a book. It could be doing a puzzle. It could be playing a game. It could be watching their favorite episode on TV. Doesn't matter what it is. This is a tool that we're going to use in order to allow them to decompress and process all those daily sort of things that have been going on. I'm guilty of it. When I pick up my kids, the first thing I do is go, oh, how was your day? Who did you play with? What did you have for lunch? And already within 5 seconds, I've already given them 5 questions. And that if they're already sort of at this heightened state, they're going to see that as a demand. Like, oh, I have to answer. Mum's asking me these questions. If I don't answer, I might get in trouble. And it's a million things going around in their brain already. And then we're just adding to that load the minute they get picked up. So I always recommend to people to step back, allow them to come to you and let them talk to you about their day. Try and avoid, and I am guilty of it still sometimes. I tell myself to stop it, but it's really hard because you want to know how your kids, you know, how they've gone. But try and hold off. Try, less is more in this case. Less verbal communication is actually really, really helpful, really useful for any child at this point, a pickup point. And have something ready for them when they get home. Have that snack, have that game, have that tablet with whatever their favorite program is, have the book ready, or whatever it is that your child can really just absorb into. And during that 20 minutes, try not to talk at them. Don't ask them any questions. Just let them decompress. Just give them that 20 minutes of chill time. And the difference, and that's just one sort of little thing to I would implement immediately if you can. It's just one other thing that we can do to help our children really, one, transition from school to home or nursery to home, or even if you've just gone out for the day, home. And it allows them to really decompress and process without that interruption or that other noise that's going on. Chances are they haven't had that all day. There's lots of interfering noise. So if we can provide that for them, we can help regulate their emotions externally. And young children, regardless of autism, ADHD or not, actually a lot of young children do struggle, of course, to regulate their emotions. That's an age thing. That's not an autistic trait. That's just an age thing. And we are kind of responsible then to help regulate them as an external person. And that's just one way we can do that to help. And it really does make a difference. Yeah.
Question on that. If they are of an age where they like, and I know this probably does lean more towards boys than girls, but that they like gaming and that they would say that that's their thing, that relaxes them, that, you know, we all know they can get a bit hyped up playing and it's all, you know, gaming can be literally like that, getting very hyped up on. But that's their thing and that's what they like to do. How do you navigate that as a parent? Do you allow a bit of that because that's their release, or are we trying to take them out of that level of hyped up? Like,
I don't know. It really depends on the individual child or young person, very much so. It all depends on how they respond to these gaming. So, for example, you might find young people who do use that, and it is a tool. It's not a luxury for a lot of our children. You know, it's not something that they're just, oh, this is amazing. This is a tool for them to decompress, which is essential. What we need to do, there is a fine line in between allowing them to decompress and then actually then becoming overstimulated. So I would observe your child, to be fair. I would have a look over the next few days. If this sounds like your child, watch them, watch their body language. Are they getting overstimulated? Are they getting hyped up? And if so, we're not going to take that away from them, because that wouldn't be fair in itself. But we are going to structure it in the right time of the day. So therefore, we're going to avoid doing that and give them an alternative in the evening or later in the evening. Because if they are hyped up and shouting at the screen and getting all hyped up, they are going to be overstimulated before bedtime. That's going to be counterproductive. So that's why we always put this kind of activity in, I would say, straight after school or straight after nursery, because that gives them that time to decompress. It gives them that time to really process and just zone out. But then they've got plenty of time to really kind of calm down afterwards. Again, it's very individual. So it might be their thing, and that might be a more of a social thing. It might not actually allow them to decompress. So again, just really watch how your child regulates, because child, it could be a teenager as well. Watch, sort of observe the effect this game has on them, but don't take it out 100%, because that is it, probably their thing. But we need to navigate the right time in the day for it to be implemented. And it's a bit of, tweaking and watching how they respond. And we can always, give them alternative and reduce those hours or those timings gradually if that suits a child better, which normally it does. Going cold turkey doesn't normally work particularly well for a lot of children. So there are
more anger and frustration.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I think, you've made me think a little bit here about actually as parents, quite often we'll go, okay, you come home from school, right? You need to do your homework and then you get your game. But that's like you're saying again, they're like, hang on, overload, demand, I need to decompress. So perhaps have that 20 minutes and decompress, then look at the homework. Yeah. And it seems counterproductive. As a parent, we think, homework done, then you can have your thing. But actually flipping it.
Giving them a sensory break is crucial. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's regardless of autism diagnosis or not. Giving people in general a sensory break, because we all have sensory needs. Every single person on this planet has sensory needs. And allowing them to have that break is actually really crucial for a lot of children. Obviously, there will be some children who want to get it out the way, and that is their mode they're in, and that's how they're focused. Absolutely. We're working with your children's needs, not against them. So your child is one to want to just get it out of the way because that's like an extension of their school day. Brilliant. Work with it. Then give them the sensory break, that 20 minutes afterwards. But for the vast majority of children, they are going to need that break, that sort of tap out and decompression time before they can reestablish and really focus on something else. And again, the quality of work is going to be so much better as well, implementing that before they do their homework. So definitely worth
possibly they'll have eaten as well, and those kinds of things that all help our focus and function.
There's lots of little tactics to be putting in place, because I can guarantee you things like that, it's all domino effect, it all circles around. Because we might be thinking, okay, well, how does that affect the sleep? Absolutely assure you, it's all interlinked. And if one thing isn't lined up particularly well, then it's going to always affect that nighttime sleep in one way or another. So lining up this and getting it right as often as you can really does have a positive impact on sleep.
Are there anything on that in the morning, like starting the day type things that are beneficial or hindrances, so as to how they begin the day?
Absolutely. So I always recommend a low demand approach, and this is not people sometimes think, okay, well is this a parenting technique they want to approach, but actually it works really well. And I always introduce to people I work with my smart choices, and this is something I've sort of created, and it works really, really well. A smart choice is something that you offer to your child or your teenager when you don't mind which one they pick. So for example, in the day, especially if you're saying to your child, just get your shoes on, we're going, and they're literally doing everything apart from getting their shoes on. I just got to get my lunch, I just got to get this, I just got to do this, or they're running out up the stairs again. And it leaves parents frustrated, angry. It really creates this really sort of negative start to the day and really quite stressful. So I always say introduce smart choices. There's lots of psychology behind this. So I won't go into too much detail because we'll be here all day. But if you give them two choices that you don't mind the answer to, so for example, do you want to put your shoes on now or your do you want to put your shoes on or your coat on first? The demand's gone. They've got a choice that empowers them. They feel in control. And that's another thing that we, again, is an age thing, but also very much an autistic thing where autistic children really thrive on feeling in control. Again, a lot of young children do regardless. And this is where they come into their element. If we allow them to have this controlled element of control, so they feel like they're in control, but actually we are still, by giving them these smart choices, it changes things, the dynamics massively. And if you can introduce that sort of during the day and into the evening and not just as a one-off, it really changes things a lot for the better. It can work wonders. It really, really can.
I love that. I don't like I like being in control.
I can see that. Yeah.
And even in adulthood of just yeah.
Children are no different. Yeah, they thrive when they've got that. But it's all about the psychology behind it, I guess. And it's all about they feel like they're you know, they've got this control, they've got this choice. But actually, we don't mind which one they pick. So it's smart.
And like you say, it relieves that demand. That's the thing, isn't it? It's when you've got that sense of too many demands or
overwhelming and you're not going to get a good result. You're going to get a shutdown or a meltdown. And meltdowns, as we know, aren't behavioural. It looks like they're behavioural to, you know, anybody walking past. But actually, a meltdown and shutdown is gone way beyond that for autistic children. And it's really, really hard. It's where their needs are not being met and they've got to such a point that they just cannot, you know, they can't cope anymore. And if we're seeing that on a daily basis, then that's going to have a huge impact on their sleep at nighttime. And that's where these smart choices can really help alleviate some of these getting to that point where they have a meltdown. Yeah. So it's really, really good. There's lots of different ways you can incorporate smart choices into daily routine.
Yeah. So in summary then, and I love how listening to you, you know, you can see how you can apply this to any child. So you don't need that diagnosis to get started, to get, you know, you're not going to do any harm. If anything, you know, take this approach. If in doubt, take this approach and you'll be okay. And you need to look at the whole 24 hours. You need to look at how you start the day, how you end the day, what demand you're putting on them, how they're, you know, potentially feeling and processing things. And all this is going to contribute to good sleep. Are there any kind of last sort of tips, as it were, tidbits that, like, when it comes to sleep, if you know, if you're there going, yeah, I've definitely got a child who's finds it very hard to shut down, they've got a busy brain, they're, you know, they are like fidgety, struggle to settle, waking in the night or early rising, you know, those classic 5 a.m. wake-ups, and they're wired and ready to start the day. And we know that we need to start looking at that full 24-hour routine. But just in the moment, like nighttime, twilight hour, what can a parent do just as an easy win to just start on the path now before obviously they get in touch with you for more help?
I think the biggest thing to do, if I'm honest, is do less. Observe your child. It is so, so important that you start understanding your child's needs. Of course you understand them to a point, but really delve in, watch their body language, less verbalization, less verbal communication. Really, really helps. Less demands, definitely. I think actually one of the biggest things we can do is lower those demands and introduce those smart choices. I know it's frustrating. I've been there myself. It's incredibly frustrating when your child is struggling to fall asleep. But we need to remember, I always say education, the more educated you are on melatonin and circadian rhythm and autistic traits and you know, and things like that, the more you understand the reasons behind why your child's doing what they're doing. And the more you understand that, the more you can get to grips with it and really understand what's going on. And therefore you can create those solutions that actually meet your child's needs. So I guess the biggest advice really is to start exploring and be a bit of an investigator, really, and start exploring your child's traits, their personality traits. I don't just mean, you know, if there may or may not be autistic traits, but their personality traits. Look at their sensory needs. Check the bedroom is set up to, you know, make sure it's comfortable for them, not for you. Because we as parents will set up our children's bedrooms and then go, oh, doesn't this look nice? Actually, we haven't looked at what they want in their bedroom, or the way the bedding is, or the fabrics of the bed, or if the pillow's on the right side. We tend to just do what we think looks nice. And so really do some investigation work with your child. Include them in it, whether it's, you know, a young child, an older child, or a teenager. Get involved with them and just observe them and see how, you know, if you do ask them a question at 7 o'clock at night, or tell them, right, go to bed, just watch their response, see how they respond, because that is a demand. And if they are not responding well to that, then maybe think about introducing those smart choices. Look, it's 8 o'clock. Do you want to go to bed now or in 5 minutes? We don't really mind if it's 5 more minutes.
Okay.
So it's things like that to start introducing, and you could do that tonight.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing. I could talk about this all day with you. My mind is going like, what about this and what about that? We do have to wrap up. There's so much to talk about. I think, you know, I'm sure there will be people listening who have, like me, got lots of questions bubbling up and would love to reach out to you, Vicky, which, you know, want to invite them to do. How can people best connect with you if they have got more questions on this?
The best thing to do is either email me at vcsleep@gmail.com, or you can pop onto my website. There is a lot of information on there and find out a bit more about me. That's www.vcsleepconsultancy.co.uk.
Amazing. We'll put the link in the show notes as well so they can find you. And amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with us about this today. It's been fascinating, and I'm sure that we'll have you back to delve deeper and do a part two at some point, because so much to talk about. Thanks for joining us today. Make sure you hit the follow or subscribe button on your podcast app so that you don't miss a juicy episode. And if you want to find out more about how Sleep Nanny can help you, or about becoming a sleep consultant franchisee, head over to the Sleep Nanny website on sleepnanny.co.uk. If you've enjoyed the episode today, please help us spread the goodness and share it with a friend, and leave us a podcast review so that more people can benefit from the takeaways that make parenting feel a little lighter. See you for the next episode of the Sleep Nanny podcast.